Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Would now be an opportune time to drop in an, drop in an anecdote from Japan?
Yes,
because it's going to concern all of you if you're at the World Cup.
Please.
So when I was out there, I was whisked away from the test match to be taken to the traditional spa town of Hakone.
Oh.
And Japanese spas, hot thermal pools, wonderful stuff, beautiful setting. What I didn't realise until they took me there and said that I had to go through the experience myself with my interpreter is that it's traditionally done completely in the nude.
Mm.
And it's really frowned upon to wear any clothes whatsoever.
You got any pictures?
So I... you definitely don't want that. And so did it all, you know, very relaxing, but no eye contact made with anyone whatsoever. After I'd done it all, the people who organised the tour said, that was fantastic, wasn't it? Wasn't it great? Do you think your colleagues in the press corps would want to do that as well? And I said, absolutely, but I think I'll be washing my hair that day. So I don't... just to warn you that if you go to Japan... you may have to go into rooms together.
Oh, I think it'd be brilliant.
Completely
wouldn't it?
In the mood.
I think.
Do you come to this spy, get the full Alan?
This has gone very Partridge, hasn't it?
It's,
the full Alan.
Hello and welcome back to The Ruck. In an exciting last 24 hours, Saracens have been beaten for the second week in a row. Eddie Jones has won the World Rugby Award for Eddie of the Year. And the RFU patron has just announced his engagement. This brings to mind some serious questions like, is the Premiership a competition undermined by the overlap with the international window because the likes of Saracen struggle? Is it right that Eddie should win Eddie of the Year again? Is Eddie Butler ever going to get a look in, and should Gareth Edwards be considered? And is Steve Jones stuck again in Datchet, or is it that, as Rugby Writer of the Year, he gets an invitation to the RFU patron's wedding? Huge topics here. I'm joined today by one former Rugby Writer of the Year, Alan Dimmock, star writer of Rugby World, and two future Rugby Writers of the Year, Johnny Fordham of The Sun and Tom Hamilton of ESPN. Tom was the only man amongst us who evaded Twickenham at the weekend and got himself to the big one in Cardiff. Hello, boys. Great to see you here.
Hello, Slotty.
Johnny, Alan and I are at Twickenham. Tom, you're at Cardiff. So if we could have the weekend again, where would we be? Would we all be in Cardiff or would we be in Edinburgh? And how many of us would be in Twickenham? I think we know how many would be in Twickenham.
To be fair, I didn't miss a second of the Scotland game because I just completely ignored what was going on at the pitch at Twickenham and just watched the Scotland game on my laptop.
Well, he's surprising us there, Alan.
So unprofessional. No, I think Cardiff, I was pretty happy with that one. Murrayfield looked outstanding, but it's good to see how Wales are progressing and also just wonderful to see Ruko Ioane.
Johnny, Cardiff or Murrayfield?
I think I'm going to throw in a curveball. Having seen the weather, I think we should have all been in Monte Carlo at the World Rugby Awards. At
topical.
The French hotbed of rugby.
Well, actually, it would have been great to be in Paris to watch France draw with Japan and then go and see the awards on Sunday evening in Monte Carlo. That would have been a nice wee double header.
Oh, why didn't you arrange that then, Dims?
I'm sorry, lads.
Are we getting to the stage when France have to qualify for their own World Cup? Or do they just buy their way into that as well? Bernard Laporte hasn't got on the ruck yet. He's not subscribed. I thought Edinburgh looked fantastic, though to what extent did Australia manage to lose the game rather than Scotland winning it? Is that really unfair? I seem to be too full of negatives on the Scottish matters. At least that's so my Twitter feed would suggest. Do you think there's anything in that at all?
Well, I think a lot of people would say that it was a foregone conclusion when there was a red card, a rightful red card for Sakopi Kepu. For those that didn't see it, it was no arms off his feet, hit to the head.
There's no doubt about it at all.
Stonewall red. And
it was like a young Alan Dimmock.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm not fond of gravity, that's for sure. But the... I mean, Scotland had already raced ahead to a 10-0 lead well before that. Australia came back, but, you know, Scotland played with adventure, brio. There was confidence through everything they did. And, you know, having 15 men on the pitch is still not going to solve problems for Australia. Like, one massive cutout pass means that Corabetti misses everyone, is in no man's land, and you create overlaps at will. That's the kind of problem that Australia had. And obviously, with a man down, that becomes even bigger an issue. But it seems like a horrible end to the tour for Australia. They started so well. I was saying off mic when I was on here last week that I was lucky enough to go and watch Australia play Japan in Japan. And Australia looked ruthless. Their backline looked brutal. Japan looked all at sea. You flip it on its head and see what's happened this weekend. And Japan finished fantastically. And Australia look bereft of ideas and ready to just go and put their feet up.
Were they already on the plane, though? Because I'm not kind of mugging off Scotland or anything, but England's the main one for them, wasn't it? And they lost that, and were their heads gone, and they were already thinking, I'd rather be home on the beach right now watching the Ashes.
You'd have thought that something in them would want to give Stephen Moore a massive successful sign-off. I mean, Michael Hooper afterwards, he didn't even try to garnish it with it wasn't as bad as everyone thought. He just said it was a terrible performance and we feel awful. We let Stephen Moore retire on that.
I think also, if you look back at the game, Scotland left at least three tries out there as well, a couple of which were during the time when Australia had 15 men. So the scoreline could and perhaps even should have been even more one-sided in Scotland's favour.
I think there is something to that, what Johnny says, though, because I saw some people in Australia had their knives out for some of the pack, saying that their work rate wasn't up there. I mean, that's one of the... Kirtley Beale has been phenomenal this season since he's been back in Australia, but that is one of the worst performances I've seen from him in a long time. He got an elbow to the... or a shoulder to the head. It cut him open. There was claret everywhere, and he just didn't seem right after that. He was dropping balls. He was out of position. He was...
I think this is one for Sam Peters, isn't it?
Well, no, I don't think that was the issue. It was more the fact that he just didn't seem... Not disinterested, but he didn't seem at the races.
Yeah. So, Eddie Jones was reminding us that Australia were the form team in World Rugby 2 weeks ago. Form team in World Rugby must be Scotland now. Sorry, I shouldn't have gone to Dan. Of course he's going to agree. Yeah, my team are World Team of the Year.
Well, they look pretty good, didn't they? I think they've been finishing on a high. That's exactly the way Scotland want to build, though. I did like Mark Palmer's intro to his Sunday Times piece, where he said, "No one does false autumnal dawns quite like Scotland." So, I think it's when you look at that. But I think definitely they're progressing. Look at someone like Byron McGuigan. He, as a Premiership player, he's one of the guys who's impressed. But you wouldn't necessarily single him out as a Test player. But he was absolutely exceptional against Australia,
and he was called in. Effectively the 11th hour to start that game as well, putting a man of the match performance. I suppose the thing, going back to the concept of false dawns, I mean, if anything else, you don't struggle for atmosphere in Cardiff, but that opening game, Wales hosting Scotland, first game of the Six Nations, that's going to be a cracker of a fixture now, because the anticipation is just going to build from here.
Yeah, big one, massive. Johnny, you said you wish you'd been in Monte Carlo this weekend. So let's talk a bit about that. So that's the World Rugby Awards, talk about the Player of the Year first. Beauden Barrett, second year in a row. I was surprised about that. Having watched the Cardiff game, though the decision had obviously been made before then, I'd have said that Rico Ioane would have been the better shout from the shortlist ahead of him. And I personally would have thought this was Farrell's year. Gents?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Farrell would get it as well, like you say. Ioane was on the breakthrough player, so I guess they thought, OK, we'll give that to him and then we'll give it to Barrett again. It does always seem like it's the kind of All Blacks awards anyway. So I did think that maybe this was the year with the Lions and everything and the kind of chink showing in their arm a little bit, that maybe they would diversify it, so to speak, a little way and actually go, you know what, Owen Farrell... He's done this for the Lions, he's done this for Saracens, he's done that for England. What more does he need to do to topple Beauden Barrett? I think personally he had a better year than Barrett. I don't know who it is that decides these awards.
And even Bernard Laporte couldn't buy it for a Frenchman. Sorry, we must stop saying that.
Poor old Camille Lopez, you know, broken leg, and you know, he had a great season and he still can't get it.
Yeah, but here's Altrad with some money, so let's give it to a Frenchman. Sorry, I must keep stop saying
that. It's funny you say that. Altrad's looking like the only horse in the race to sponsor the France national team shirt again this year.
Is that right?
No one else is bidding against him, so Well done, Moed.
Okay, just a bit of context here if this seems like too much of an in-joke. Moed Altrad is the owner of Montpellier and the owner of Bernard Laporte and the owner of World Rugby. So, no, stop it. So, Tom, who would you have given World Player of the Year to?
I'll tell you what, watching Rico Ioane on Saturday was pretty special. He had a direct involvement in four of their tries, four of the five tries, scored two of them himself. He's absolutely exceptional. 20 years old. He scored 10 tries in 11 tests this year. His potential's absolutely frightening. But having said that, I'd have given it to Owen Farrell. I just think he's had an exceptional year. His accuracy, the way he's also developed his own game, his leadership skills have all come on. I would have happily seen him take Player of the Year. Also, to slightly preempt your next question, there would have been a good argument for a Farrell doubleheader with Andy Farrell potentially taking Coach of the Year, given how good he was on the Lions tour.
That's such a clever call.
Thanks, Lossie.
See, the World Rugby just don't think like that, do they?
No, but...
You're going to be in the panel next year?
Probably not.
He's not from New Zealand, so he's ruled out.
No,
we're
not taking that serious enough. I think that's a really good call.
But
because the Lions' success was very much a Farrell success.
Yeah,
on Farrell, the coaching front.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is, they don't... think it has to go. So for example, because the All Blacks are so good most of the time, the head coach of the All Blacks gets a go anyway. It's amazing to think of some of the assistant coaches that have worked with the All Blacks for the years who just don't get considered because all the credit goes to Hansen. Just on Johnny saying that the All Blacks seem to win all the awards as well. Portia Woodman won the women's award, but actually I think
he's a Kiwi,
but actually I think another Kiwi should have won it. I think Kelly Brazier, for me, should have won it ahead of her, because Portia Woodman does a lot of fantastic work going forward. You see her skinning people for tries, as she did in the Women's World Cup. A fantastic athlete in 7s and 15s. But actually, Kelly Brazier makes a lot of what New Zealand do tick, and I think she can feel a little bit hard done by, but at least she's got a fellow Black Fern to congratulate.
So the Eddie of the Year award, are there Edwards in rugby that you would like to nominate there? All right, let's move on to Coach of the Year.
That's completely ruined it, hasn't it? That's
not even Ed Quirk, the Australian flanker with the massive
Quirk dog.
Eduardo Gorey?
Gorey, yeah.
Sorry, Ed Barnes, the former London Irish fly-off.
Great
play for London Irish.
No, but this is an issue, isn't it? The dearth of Edwards in rugby.
I mean, how could you ignore Eddie Jones, though? I mean, like Dims was saying about Hansen getting it every single year, that if you... Like you say, you're not going to give it to an assistant coach, so it has to go to a head coach. So who else would get it?
The Eddie of the Year award is the Coach of the Year award. So you would have had Eddie ahead of the Lions coach?
Yeah, head and shoulders above him, yeah.
Why head and shoulders?
Because I don't think that Lions... I think like Dims and you have just said, I think that the Lions was all down to Andy Farrell, not Warren Gatland.
I think the interesting thing about Eddie winning it this year, 2017, is I thought his 2016 was outstanding, and his 2017 was a slight flattening off of the improvement curve.
Yeah, but I think the thing for that, and it's been one of the themes when you come to see Eddie Jones doing his post-match press stuff after these November tests, is one of the things that strikes me is it must be getting harder and harder for Eddie Jones to maintain a siege mentality, because things have gone so well for him, even though they're not playing well, or not playing to the extremely entertaining standards that we'd expect and want from England at Twickenham. They're still winning, and so it's hard to sort of drum up that feeling that everyone's against us, that helps teams spur themselves on. So I think one of the great skills of Eddie Jones must be to try and maintain that siege mentality from here on. I don't know what everyone else thinks.
I think it's absolutely natural. I think he's just such an edgy character. I mean, the other day I asked him about 2 years in the job, on the 15th of this month or whenever it was that he was announced as England boss, and he just started firing off about blaming the press that, oh, you guys wrote this about Argentina, you don't want us to win consistently, blah blah blah, and off he went. It's like, that's the easiest question ever.
Maybe not.
I think, just going back to the former point, that Gatlin did nothing on the Lions tour is extremely unfair. I thought he did a brilliant job in bringing it all together. I'm just going to put that on record. But with Eddie Jones,
how was his coffee when you went round to his house?
I was extremely warmly welcomed by Mrs. Gatland and young Bryn and Gabby. It was a lovely afternoon in Hamilton. Tom Hamilton in Hamilton. But equally, I think Eddie, his levels of micromanagement, I think, are pretty much second to none. I think if you look at the way that he controls both the team and attempts to control various dialogue around the team as well, it shows how thorough he is, but it must be absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, because you say second to none there. Like, do you see that as a positive?
So, he's not doing a bad job, is he?
The players absolutely love him. And that's all that matters. They absolutely love him, and they would die for that guy. So, you know, that is great. I mean, to pick him up after the World Cup and get them to buy into what he's doing so quickly, I think is brilliant.
When he took over, and the coach of the year at that stage was Michael Checker, wasn't it? Do you remember how much mirth he had at Checker's expense? He could hardly refer to Checker without referring to him as coach of the year, as if that was someone to really have a go at. So he's there to be shot at now.
As one of our colleagues said after the press conference, when Eddie Jones was raving about Australia being the form team of the year and all this kind of stuff, you know, he's just killing them with kindness, and that's the way it got reported. Because we're all sitting there thinking, is he actually meaning what he's saying here, or because of the way he's saying it, is he trying to kind of get inside their heads and twist the psychology there? I think that he's always saying something for a reason. I don't think he would always openly just throw out compliments, especially when it's Australia and Australia week. Why would you be so
he doesn't waste a word, does he? There's method behind everything he said.
Absolutely, and he seems to have insulated himself fantastically well, because as Johnny mentions, the players not only really respect him, but they warm to him as well, and that's got help, because you can see how other coaches, and you mentioned Checker there, the short downfall he's had in this November is notable. The results that Australia have had, but also the way he's blown up. Now, we spoke in the podcast last week about how he there shouldn't be so much fuss about what he says and how he reacts. It's an emotional game. We like emotional characters. We like colour. That's why we love Eddie so much. But the results that they've gotten have been terrible. And you see what happens with someone like Guy Novès in France, for example, when you get the impression that the players kind of loathe him for what he's doing. So you can't undervalue what Eddie Jones has created in that. Sure, people are terrified of him, and I can imagine it's really tough to work under him. But as Tom mentioned, and as Johnny alluded to, he gets results, and he just seems to have created that barrier between himself and trouble. Whereas some coaches, Michael Checker in particular, seems to have struggled in stepping between the players and the performances and the press, and making things letting him take the flak, but also allowing the players to do what they do, because it looks like it's spilling over onto the pitch for Australia.
Yeah, and I thought Eddie was quite smart, the way he disarmed that whole situation when he was done for swearing in the box at some Underhill mistake. You know, he apologised and then made light of it, and then you move on, and again it's all part of the mighty Eddie. His legend goes on.
The fixture list that Eddie Jones has walked into has been very kind to him, and I suppose it's almost inevitable playing some of the teams that they have in November that they're going to flatten off. I agree with you in that respect, but also because of what they did in the summer, they've opened the door for a lot of young guys to get more caps. Surely now is the time to start playing them in big games. So actually, if things have flattened off, but you've got guys with caps that need more, bringing them in. That's why I'd like to see someone like Sam Underhill continue to get a run in the Six Nations. And I'd like to see Harry Williams come in the front row for England as well and actually start, because he looks like he's got a hell of a promise. We already know what someone like Dan Cole can offer in the front row and in a game. You know, steadying set piece, gives away penalties, doesn't offer much coming round the corner. Let's see what someone like that can fit into an already winning and structured team. So incremental changes is probably what Eddie Jones should be seeing, and that's where you start getting closer to the track for the World Cup.
This is like a segue moment, isn't it? This is called a segue, when you move smoothly on from one conversation to the next. So we're now going to do our if Six Nations is tomorrow and everyone's fit, who do we think is the first choice England team? So Alan, you've already started, so do you want to read out your team from top to bottom, and then we'll pick it apart?
Okay, so at one I've gone for Marco Vunipola, Hartley retained at captain at hooker, Harry Williams at tight head. That's what I've got. Because of the back row, that I think it should be, it kind of dictates what your second row should be. So I actually think Itoje and Laws should be the second row for that start of the Six Nations, because they'll offer more with ball going forward. Because the back row I see is Robshaw, Underhill and Vunipola. And with the exception of Vunipola's ballast and blast going forward, Robshaw and Underhill maybe need a little help in terms of attack. Scrum half, I could kind of flip a coin, but I'm actually leaning towards Danny Kerr because of his brilliance kicking, is what I see. Just tactically, he offers you a lot. I think forward and Farrell axis stays, Joseph outside centre, Daly and May on the wings, and I'd like to see Watson at fullback. That's what I go for.
Does So you've gone with Hartley at hooker. Okay, yeah. start with hooker first, because I've selected Hartley at hooker as well, even though I've been a Jamie George fan ever since.
I think everyone sitting here
began.
Actually has as well.
No, I went for Hartley as well. Yeah.
I've got Hartley.
So that's extraordinary, isn't it? But would we all agree that Jamie George is a better hooker?
I think he's got more strings to his bow, but.
It's the dynamic, isn't it? One thing I
noticed over the ref mic on the weekend when they played Samoa was at scrum time with Hartley in the middle there, it's just non-stop chat, you know, messages all the time, non-stop. First England scrum against Samoa, it was like dead quiet, and it was just like, oh, hang on, this is a bit weird, and it seemed a bit flat as well.
I think that's right, but I thought Jamie George did exactly what Jamie George was supposed to do on Saturday, which is what England need, which is contribute tempo, hands on the ball, carries, everything to speed up the England game and to put them on the front foot. Which
is a lovely inside pass for him for the try as well.
Yeah, which Mike Brand totally failed to do about 5 minutes earlier.
I've got Genge at loosehead. I'd like to see him get a start.
To start ahead of Mako.
I think Mako is the first choice prop, but I'd like to see Genge have a crack at it, proper crack, during the Six Nations, see how he can do. I think he's extremely exciting. Then Hartley, Williams, Launchbury, Atoje, Laws, Underhill, Vinopola, Youngs, Ford, Daly, Farrell, Teo, May, Watson.
Yeah, I was interested. You had Joseph is your 13, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'm with Tom on Teo. Who's your 13, Johnny?
My back line is Youngs, Farrell, Daly on the left wing. Got Tuilagi and Slade in the centres.
Oh, whoa. You've gone for Tuilagi.
Yeah, I did originally have Teo, but because it was allowed to be if anyone's fit. I just think that Tuilagi, if he can get back to his best, which I don't know how many times this has been said now, probably close to a million, he will be absolutely devastating. And if he can stay out of the pub as well. And then I've got Nowell and Watson to finish that one off. And again, I've picked Hartley. I picked Sinclair as the tight head.
Nice. Dude, but Sinclair's just got an Eddie finisher all over him, hasn't he?
He's on my bench, along with Simmons, Hughes, Kerr, Tuilagi and Noel.
Does anyone think that Simmons should be given a go at seven? I mean, I actually have Underhill as my seven, but they're different players, and I like what both of them bring.
He's an interesting one, isn't he? I think he's definitely going to feature in that squad for the World Cup. His versatility is certainly something which adds a lot in his favour. In a game, perhaps, like Italy, it'd be good to see him play at seven there, maybe against France as well. But I think last year he was playing for, was it the Cornish Pirates? So yeah. his rise has been astonishing. But he is extremely exciting as well.
There's a question that comes into that as well, because Italy are the opening game of the Six Nations for England. Would you like to see England pick their strongest team and stick with them for a full Six Nations?
That'll happen, absolutely.
But is that what you'd want to see? Or would you want to see a lot more of the younger guys? So, for example, again, starting at loosehead, with Harry Williams at tight head. Would you like to see more of those guys?
I don't think you have the time to do squad? It, do you? You don't have the time to do it in the Six Nations, though.
Well, what, so maybe use them in South Africa?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, I think that he's pretty sure that he's got well over three quarters of his World Cup squad already sorted. Mm-hmm. So I think that this Six Nations is going to be, because again, I think someone asked Eddie the other week if when it comes to the World Cup, what will you do in terms of selection? Will you look to kind of change things around a little bit against some games and do things differently against others? And he said, no, first team, every single game, same team, roll them out, off we go.
Eddie did say this on Saturday, didn't he? He said that he needs wise heads, or was it amazing? Maybe it was on the Thursday. He was talking about the numbers 28 to 31 in his squad and how important they were, and that they're definitely not going to be the next new young thing coming through. They're going to be the really savvy old seniors, which I think Dylan might be by that stage, but he'll go whatever as a present. So you can see Wigglesworth fitting into that pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Would that include Haskell as well?
No, he'd be contracted to doing his sun column. I don't know if we would release him for the World Cup.
The sun column's gone down amazingly well. Is that true, or I just made that up?
No, it has. Yeah, amazingly well. Although, yeah.
And that's in spite of its ghost writer.
That's what James Haskell says anyway. He said it's the best column he's ever done. He said the ghost
since
is fantastic.
Last week. Move on from England. So let's do this marks out of 10 nonsense, because Eddie hates that, doesn't he? What are we going to give to England? About a seven
autumn.
For the autumn?
Six.
Seven seems fair.
I think seven's fair.
Okay.
Look at the number of players they had missing. Farrell played one 80-minute session. I think Eddie's played it perfectly the autumn.
Does that mean Scotland are a nine?
If only for hope, Yeah, absolutely. The goodwill.
Let's build them up. Let's build them up.
Come on,
let's build
them up.
This is like last year all over again.
We need a bit more than a hope. They've been outstanding. I mean, they've got the belief and
what fantastic foundations, Slotty. They've laid down there. They just need to build on them.
And they did it without Stuart Hogg.
The trouble with the podcast is people can't see the way you're smiling at the moment with that sort of.
All right, because you want me to pile in and say 10 out of 10, they're going to win the World Cup. It's going to be amazing.
No, I don't. I just.
Hey, that's what
I
we
have
do.
Watched
Come
the
on.
Last two
true.
Games.
Yes, that's very true, actually.
I've watched the last two games and wish I was at both of them. I think it's been amazing out there.
Tell you what, it's been an incredible surprise, their performance as well. Stuart Hogg pulling out of the warm up against Australia as well. You know, no one gave him a cat's chance in hell from there. And the front row changes now. They changed the front row very early on in that game against Australia to bring Xander Fagerson back on, having not started the game. But, you know, such pleasant surprises. It's fantastic. I mean, as I said earlier, that first game of the Six Nations, that's an interesting discussion for another podcast, is what team Scotland pick, because they've now got a plethora of options for that first game.
Well, my question is, have they been blessed by Greg Laidlaw's injury?
There's the social side of things you have to factor in as well, is that Ali Price and Finn Russell have a near telepathic understanding of each other. I think it comes from the fact that they're very, how do I say this kindly?
Just don't
very,
say it kindly then.
Very joyful but naive young men. So they're on the same wavelength as each other. They're,
have you been out with
everything
them?
Is a joy to them. Everything is a pleasant surprise. And
I think Alan's quite telling us everything he knows.
Yeah. So they've got a fantastic understanding with each other. And Ali Price just plays a hell of a lick anyway. I mean, he got in trouble against the All Blacks for G'ing up the crowd, and he apologised. He said after the game that he showed the referee his doe eyes because he just got caught up in the moment. And that's the kind of excitement that you get with Scotland at the moment. That's why they're so fun at the moment, is because they get caught up.
But you say
in
he plays at that pace. That's what Scotland need. Yeah. That's what they've been doing so well. And
absolutely. And when Finn Russell kicks like he does from out wide, as he has recently in big games, you know, it's hard to see where Greg Laidlaw fits in the plan, but he will have to, because as you were talking about Eddie's plans for England and how you need those veterans, those wise heads in a squad around the time, that's what Greg Laidlaw is, because Greg Laidlaw was actually, although he's injured, was actually in and around the Scotland squad through November. He actually held team meetings, according to some of the players, according to Gregor Townsend. So he's still very much in with the Bricks.
He's got Dylan Hartley status, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And the thing is, he's such a strong-willed character that they're gonna need to rely on him again at some point. You can't just throw him out.
Tom, Wales, marks out of 10. You were there this weekend. Their season hasn't finished. I think they've got a massive game against South Africa.
I'll reserve judgment on the mark until then, but they have to beat South Africa for this autumn to be deemed a success. You can see what they're trying to do. They're certainly trying to build a more expansive style. The 10-12 axis between Bigger and Owen Williams impressed. I thought they played really well against New Zealand, but I think they've also perhaps forgotten maybe what they're good at, which is, I think they really missed Jonathan Davis and George North to provide that, the straight running, the people, instead of trying to dodge around the defence, they can just power straight through. I think they missed someone like Moriarty as well to come back in. Josh Navidi was outstanding against New Zealand, as was Rob Evans, but equally I think their injured contingent, there's a lot of injuries around at the moment, but when you look at Warburton, George North, Davis, Moriarty, you're seeing a crux. That's almost their spine of the team. They need those players back.
Tom's hit the nail on the head there. I texted him halfway through that game on Saturday to say, where is Wales penetration? Because for all this clamour for them playing a new style of rugby, it just looked like they were passing the ball in front of New Zealand and then going, and now we'll run. And of course, the drift defence just swallowed them up every time. It just didn't seem... It seems like they've got caught up in the idea of what it's like to have nice attack, but they've lost the penetration.
I think that's the Jonathan Davis answer, isn't it? Where is that? I mean, I think he's the guy who does that, and they haven't found a way for their system to make that work, so they're relying on individuals.
Yeah,
and he's not there.
They're going to Argentina in the summer, and they need to come back from there with 3-0.
Are you serious about that?
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant knowledge.
Would you not think they should come back from Argentina with a 3-0?
You're listening to The Ruck, and we'll be back in a minute.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to The Ruck. I'm Owen Sloss and I'm here with Alan Dimmock, Tom Hamilton and Johnny Fordham. The hemispheres, the gap, north and south, there's been a lot of talk about this. Some people say, oh, the All Blacks have dropped off a bit, and then Eddie Jones says, oh, nonsense, what are you talking about? They'd lost three in 12 months, so I think that's significant. What's the view there, boys? I think Scotland, Ireland in particular, have got a lot stronger. England are strong, so it's I feel they are getting close together.
I think as a unit, Europe, like you say, Europe's got stronger as a unit. I don't think necessarily that the best of Europe, so say England right now, has got any closer, so to speak, to the All Blacks. I think if England play the All Blacks tomorrow and they both had their full strength sides out, the All Blacks would win. And I still think that when it comes to the World Cup, that the All Blacks are going to win it again. I think England will run them close, but the way it's set out, it looks like they're going to get to the, well, if it goes to form or whatever, you know, playing fantasy rugby, England will meet All Blacks and the All Blacks in the semi-final. Yeah. And thank you very much, All Blacks will be in the final, I think. I just think that right now England just lack a bit of X factor, maybe. I think that, yes, Ford's a good fly half, but Beauden Barrett's so much better. Even though he shouldn't have got World Player of the Year, I just think that someone like him in that team, just that trumps him every time. And then you look at the pack as well, you just go through the whole pack.
It's astonishing how much expectation, excitement there already is around next year's match between England and the All Blacks. I imagine they could sell out Twickenham three times over for that.
It is like one of those heavyweight boxing title fights, isn't it, when it's just like become the fight everyone wants to see. I mean, that's what this game is.
The gap as well depends on your perception. It doesn't help who the All Blacks play every time they go into the Rugby Championship, because we've seen that Australian side is pretty much schizophrenic. They can be they can turn it on and be amazing and get a historic win against the All Blacks, or they can be a dirge and just not play very well at all. South Africa, answers on a postcard at what the hell is going on with South African international team, because it seems like they're playing musical chairs for selection all the time. And when you see that, and Argentina are not the force that we saw them even 5 years ago, and to see them not kick on, but while see other teams in the Six Nations kick on, suddenly there's so much anticipation about the Six Nations. You know, I've had so many texts already about the Calcutta Cup match. Ireland are already making noises about the Six Nations. Bring it on. England have a fantastic win streak. So on paper, it looks fantastic for the Northern Hemisphere. Everything is going swimmingly whilst everyone is falling away. But as Johnny says, the All Blacks can still turn it on. You know, it didn't look at any point like Wales were going to run them close in that game at the weekend.
I think just one other thing about talking about Northern Hemisphere, for a united front, France are letting the side down somewhat, aren't they? They've taken about four steps backwards during the autumn tests, and Italy, I think it's fair to say, is still in transition. But France, Laporte today said that he's going to look over things and see if change is needed, but I think it's inevitable that some change is definitely needed there.
It's funny, last time we came in to do the podcast here last week, Julien Laurent was doing the football podcast, a French journalist, and he said, you need to get into Guy Novès. We don't need to get into Guy Novès because the entire French public is baying for his blood right now. The problem is that they're turning around in France and saying that it's looking like it could cost up to €1.5 million to get rid of that French coaching team. So they might have to stick with it. So what happens?
Hang on a sec. They've got someone who deals with that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
Bring in Moed.
that's very true. But what happens, because there were noises made about, maybe Bernie Laporte will try and have a little bit more of a say. By all accounts, he went into the changing room and had a word with the players at the weekend and was very heated. So it seems completely in disarray. But Guinoves is a guy who is unwilling to change. He dragged Toulouse to the summit of European rugby, but then dragged them down the other side again. And it looks like he's doing no better with France. So Tom's right. They're absolutely not helping this Northern Hemisphere debate at all.
Okay, just on the French thing, just an either-or answer from each of you. So you can look at France two ways. Either they're so damaged by the structure in the country with the number of foreigners playing in there, etc., and the amount of access they have to their players and the fact that the top 14 doesn't give the national team enough chance. Either that's a problem, or there's still so much talent there that a decent coach could save them. Which one?
I think there's too much talent there for them to be this bad.
Okay.
No, I agree with you there, absolutely.
I think if you look at England and Eddie Jones now getting more access to his players, there's a firm argument there that that is what's part of this kind of the backbone to this England transition, is the fact that he's got more access to his players, more time with them. And I think that that's obviously clearly worked for a positive way for England. So why couldn't France do that?
Okay, well, I'm agreed on that. We're going to finish the pod with just a flick of a look at where we're going back to next week, the Premiership, and then after that we're going to European rugby. But we've got a week of Premiership, and there's been a couple of weeks during the last 2 weeks of the autumn where the Premiership clubs have been playing, and there have been some pretty strange results. I say strange results, but they're kind of familiar in that every autumn, and also in the Six Nations, some of the top teams lose because they lose so many of their top players. So is the Premiership significantly undermined by the fact this happens time after time?
Well, I think one of the standout things from this weekend of Premiership rugby is it didn't help to play at home at all. There's some massive victories away from home. You got Exeter winning at Allianz, you had Gloucester winning away, Worcester winning at Welford.
Worcester at Welford, that was a massive score.
I mean, you're right, there were some topsy-turvy results, but How they shake out in the Premiership is, I think a lot of it is down to personnel missing. You're right. I mean, Exeter just managed to pip. They held on for 7 or 8 minutes after taking the lead and did just enough to defeat Saracens. But Saracens are a completely different team in this window. But this comes down to the age-old argument, as you mentioned there. Do you think that teams should be playing in this window, Johnny?
No, because the thing about the Premiership is it gets completely lost during autumn internationals and during the Six Nations. And the thing about the league is that there are people who enjoy watching rugby but will go and watch England play rugby. They don't have any kind of Premiership allegiance, and they wouldn't be able to tell you who's playing in the Premiership, who's top, you know, all this kind of stuff. And that's because it's just hidden away, scurried away on BT Sport because the Premiership signed up to this big deal. And the whole thing gets completely lost. And it has done for years now. I think that it's a shame that the league plays second fiddle in the way to the, you know, the international scene. I think that they're both great competitions. You know, we've seen some great Premiership games already this year, so why can't we keep it true to what it is and just keep it running through go for a break. Anglo-Welsh, I think, is just a bit of a powder puff competition, isn't it, for the kids. That's not working at all, and the Premiership should be king, and I don't think they should be playing when it's internationals. It doesn't matter if they've got a few of their players back or not, they should have full strength sides out all the time. But the only thing is, if they then took a break, then someone like Owen Farrell or, you know, someone like Elliot Daly, who plays every single England international, sorry he didn't, but come from the Lions, play heavily in the Lions, heavily in England's autumn, despite having an injury at first, goes back to his club, he'd have to play again. So it's a tough one, but my personal view would be that it would be brilliant to work out a way of getting it so the Premiership wasn't playing during England and Scotland games, etc., but that's going to be a longer season and no one wants a longer season either.
I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the players get brought back in, the England players especially, reintegrated, because looking at the weekend's fixtures, you've got, there's some big games there. You've got Exeter against Bath on the Saturday, you've got Gloucester against London Irish, Wasps are playing Leicester, and both teams there will be desperate for victories. Similarly on the Sunday, you've got Harlequins against Saracens. Harlequins, John Kingston, their director of rugby, said they have approximately 30 players unavailable for their game against Bath. Are they going to start? I imagine they'll have to start the likes of Marler, Rob Shaw, Danny Kerr, bring them straight back in. And then on Friday, it being Northampton, pretty average season by their standards against Newcastle, and Worcester against Sale. Big games for all of them, really. We're at the sort of tipping point now where there is a divide between the top and the foot of the table, and if the teams have their England players, you imagine they're going to want to play them as much as possible.
But then you've got Europe straight afterwards as well, so how do you juggle that?
And in between, you've got Test rugby still cannibalising club rugby
this weekend, of course.
Because you've got Wales playing South Africa. Just chuck another test in there for good measure.
And on that bombshell, this is the end of the ruck. Thanks very much to Alan, Tom, and Johnny. World Rugby Awards last night. I failed to mention that the podcast of the year was.